Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Detraction Pieces Podcast, episodes 313. And it's a bonus episode. And it's a bonus episode because it was someone I really wanted to have a chat with, and I really wanted to release it with plenty of time ahead of their Soho Theatre comedy show. It's Rich Wilson. I'm a big fan of Rich. I'm a big fan of his podcast, Insane in the Membrane. And I went to see his Edinburgh Fringe show, Rich Wilson, Death Becomes Him. We do talk about both these things, but you might get into the podcast and think that we're not going to, because we spend ages just talking about the world. So we don't get to the actual more promo-y type bits until towards the end. But I saw his Death Becomes Him show at the Edinburgh Fringe this year, and it was really praised. It got amazing reviews and was invited to come and do a few dates at the Soho Theatre, and for good reason. It's fantastic. I can't recommend it enough. So yeah, I'll keep the intro brief, but I did just want to say that, as I said, Rich Wilson, Death Becomes Him, is at the Soho Theatre on Friday the 20th and Saturday the 21st of March, 8:45. Grab your tickets. Edinburgh Fest magazine gave it a 4-star review. I Talk Telly, 4-star review. It's a hilarious hour of pure stand-up. And it really is. It's fantastic. He's, as you'll hear, you'll hear it all from the conversation. I don't think many of you, if you live in London, will get to the end of this conversation and not be wanting to buy tickets, live in or near London, because it's an amazing show and it's the last time it's going to be popped out there. So yeah, check that out. As ever, speechdevelopmentrecords.com. You can get loads of cool stuff there. And patreon.com/scroobiuspip is $1 a month to support the podcast. But again, as I keep saying now, most episodes I'm kind of pointing out that I'd rather you support the guest than support the podcast. You can do both. If you can afford to do both, then throw your money at me, my friend. But if you've got to choose between the two, go and see Rich Wilson, Death Becomes Him, at the Soho Theatre, because it's a show that I really adored. And me and Rob Alton, I think it was, were talking about... Oh, and Mae Young. I've got Mae Young on next week, and she's fantastic. Mae Young? I haven't got Mae Young on. I've got Mae Martin on. Jesus. Mae Martin on next week, and we were talking about how kind of sad it is that there's these shows that appear. They're amazing, but only exist in that room at that time, because they're not turned into a special on Netflix or whatever else. And this is one of those shows, so... Genuinely, if you're on the fence, you won't be by the end of this, but even if you're on the fence now, just go and book your ticket, mate. It's going to be great. So yeah, I implore you to go to that rather than buy my merch or support me on Patreon. But if you want to do both, then even better. All right, let's get into the podcast, eh? This is episode 313 of the Detraction Pieces podcast with Rich Wilson. Let's get going. Right, is that all rolling? Right, I'm here today with Rich Wilson. How are you, man?
Good, man. Very good, very good. Very busy, but good.
I need at some point, and I've said it a few times, we need to just come and hang out at yours at some point. Please, because every time I've ever been here, it's for a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I recorded with Jay Deer. I recorded on your podcast over there in the kitchen. And I'm like, hang on, I always love catching up, always love hanging out. It's a lovely location. Every time I record a podcast, I'm like, I love your, like, because you're right on the seafront.
It's kind of
beautiful, isn't it? So, yeah, how's it all been?
Good, man. Yeah, we've just been, the gigs, we're just gigging all the time. We've just got back from, we're in Blackpool. And we had to drive up, drop Jade in Salford, and then I drove up to Blackpool.
Oh, wow.
Then I did the gig there, drove to Lancaster around that way, and then drove back up to Blackpool. And then Jade joined me in Blackpool, and then yesterday we drove to Exeter. So it's just
the life of a road comic, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd you find that?
It's long.
Yeah.
But you have to keep reminding yourself that, you know, I used to drive a bus, so.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that anymore, so it's an absolute plus. I get to do this with you in the daytime. You know, it's you have to remind yourself how lucky you are.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely key. I have that on on film sets all the time that will be, I'll have a day where I'm in and we won't get to my scene and I will have spent 8 hours just kind of hanging around and I'll be getting in my car to go home and the driver will be like, oh, you annoyed with that? And I'll be like, no, I've been paid. I used to work in factories. I've worked in retail, I've worked in factories. Like, I ain't getting stressed about waiting around on set.
Exactly.
It's realising that. But equally, it's easy to get into that place into that mode of moaning about it constantly, hating the road life.
There is that. The only thing that annoys me is that I'm organised to a point, but I don't organise my food. So I'm always eating shit, and that annoys me. I'm like, I'm going to have the words meal deal on my gravestone. And I'm like, come on, man, just cook a chicken or whatever you want to do. Prepare a salad, something, before you go.
Yeah.
Instead of buying all this crap.
Yeah. But I beat myself up over eating badly on the road, but then equally, if the opportunity to eat badly is taken away from me on the road, I get really annoyed. Even though I don't want to do it, like I had it the other day, I was driving home from somewhere and I pulled into a services and I just thought, I want a Krispy Kreme donut.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Just what I want. It'll get me through. I might buy three, I don't know, but I'll definitely buy one. And I popped in and the woman at the Smiths in this services, like the place weren't closing, but she was just like putting the shutters down a little bit. I was like, oh, what's going on? She's like, oh, I'm just going to close for a few minutes. I've got to sort some stuff. I was like, right, I just want a donut, so can I just have that?
Yeah,
have that donut. And the donut thing's at, like outside, and she's like, "Nah, I'm closed." And I'm there like, "This is a nightmare because now I just want to take it because I've tried to pay for it and it's there, but I didn't. But it was just that absolute hell of like, but I just want it. I've got the cash."
Yeah,
and she's like, "Nah,
really?"
And I'm like, "I'm really hungry, man.
Just let me have it.
I'm just here." But yeah, I don't know why I got onto that. But how is that the balance of being in a relationship as a comedian? Because one of the challenges to hold down a relationship can sometimes be that you're a road dog as such and your partner isn't. But does it kind of work better that both you and Jade are living that life?
I'd say so, yeah. Because I was married before and that was one of the key factors that really put an end to it, because I was never there. You know, I'd be in Australia and New Zealand for 2 months, and you know, and you're with someone that, you know, they married you because they want you to be with them and be around, and you're not, and so you're two people living completely separate lives, and it really does cause problems. Whereas Jade and I, a lot of the time, will be, if not in the same place, there's a way we can work it where I can drive up and drop her off like I did at the weekend.
Yeah.
And then head on up and then pick her up on the way back down. And so
I love that.
Yeah, so it does work. Or the understanding that when, like, Jade will be away filming or doing whatever, or I'll be away gigging, and there's just that understanding, like, yeah, this is what we do. And funnily enough, that kind of strengthens it because we don't see each other a lot.
Yeah.
So when we do, it's important that it's quality time that we have together, you know?
I love
that. Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because I think it really helps if someone knows what that life is and
absolutely
what that job is. Because I think it's easy, if you're not part of it, to think it's all this party.
Yeah.
And you're just on the road and it's this. And it does become work. And even if it's a great gig, you're in a hotel room. You're not, you know, it's not a holiday, but it can seem like a holiday at times. And that can cause resentment and cause annoyance and that kind of thing. Because, like, well, you've been on the road for 3 months, I'm at home.
Yeah. Well, that was,
you know,
what was happening.
Together.
That was it. Like, my wife would see pictures of me in bars in Australia or me. I'd post something on Instagram just saying, oh, wow, it's been amazing gigging here. And they don't see the fact that there's been a few times you've been lying on your bed, missing home and wishing you weren't there. And they just, like you say, they just see the fun side. And that obviously, I mean, you know, flip it. If that was me, I'd be livid.
Yeah, it's understandable.
Completely,
but again, that's the only side you're going to present on socials, isn't it?
Exactly.
You're not really going to be going, oh man, I'm hating this tour. It's an absolute nightmare.
It's too hot.
You're all, you know, you're going to be, oh, I love you all. Thanks for coming out. You're not going to be that ungrateful. Fuck's sake, another gig tonight. Brilliant. Really looking forward to it. You know.
So it's that. It's good that Jade. We are. Yeah, we both understand how it works. We both. It's good as well because Jade stars on the set, you know, it's on the rise, and it's And what she says to me, she goes, I'm really pleased that you're busy and doing stuff as well.
Yeah.
Because she'd feel bad if I was just sat around, because we're both comics, but if one of us is more successful than the other, that can cause some problems.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask that, because you two seem to have a really good balance on that and a really good grasp on that. You're both ridiculously supportive of each other.
Yeah.
And both ridiculously proud of all successes.
That's it.
There doesn't seem to be that rivalry or jealousy. And again, I guess it is good that you're both busy, but still, even if you're both busy, there's always going to be one that's doing better than the other. If you're in the same industry, there's going to be one that's doing better than the other, and that can cause resentment or weirdness in a relationship. And you guys seem to have that spot on.
It's funny, because you understand how the industry works.
Yeah.
And at the moment, because we're in the middle of a massive... things are being corrected. There's been, like diversity issues are being dealt with. You know, straight white men have had it easy for years.
Yeah.
And now, now that's like... Now a lot of places, a lot of things are less likely to take on a straight white man.
Yeah.
Because he's had his go.
Yeah,
and now we're changing it up. And I understand that. So yeah. I'm not bitter
again,
and twisted about that,
It's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's right as well. I loved it. You've nailed it perfectly there, because I saw Jade did a post at the weekend. And again, Jade can say it, but she was saying, my support act tonight is my partner. He's a better comedian than me, but he's a straight white male. He's straight and white, and he's got a penis, and that isn't very trendy at the moment, and so on and so forth. And I get that as a point, but then equally, again, it's what I love about Insane in the Membrane, your podcast, is you will talk about all these things openly, and you'll say, oh yeah, it's weird, isn't it, that it's harder to get a gig now as this, but you'll also say it's correct though.
Absolutely.
It's right. Yeah, it's how it should be, because it is redressing a balance.
Yep.
It's not tokenism. I discussed this, the podcast will come out the week after this, actually. I discussed it a bit with Mae Martin, because she's a great comedian, and a new TV show is amazing. But I was kind of saying on that, it's like, it's not tokenism or diversity for diversity's sake. The fact is, straight white men were starting to run out of ideas for a bit. And the example I always give is the film industry.
Absolutely.
That people say now, oh, there's so many black films and so many women in films, so many lesbian, all this kind of thing. It's like, every film has been a remake in recent years.
Exactly.
A remake or a sequel.
It's getting ridiculous.
The old white men had run out of ideas. They're just remaking the same film over and over again. So then you have a Moonlight or something that wins everything, and it's an amazing, powerful new voice. It's not tokenism. It's not just, oh, well, we need to diversify. It's like, no, it's for a good reason.
Yeah. Well, they even did it in the remake of 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
When he brought them in, and he goes, well, the thing is, we've run out of ideas, so we've got to rehash. And he wasn't talking about the film; he was talking about the case they're working on.
Yeah,
and it really made me laugh. It's exactly what you've just said. It's that. Yeah, we're gonna. It was getting ridiculous.
Yeah,
because there were a lot of films that didn't need to be remade, like RoboCop didn't need to be remade.
No. Total Recall, kind of 80s kind of.
Yeah, and they made him. The originals are still great. All right, maybe cinematography or whatever, or the. There was something a bit cheesy about them because of the timing or where it's from. And the only reason you still like them is because like a nostalgia thing.
Yeah.
But when they remade RoboCop, they got rid of Clarence Boddicker.
Yeah.
And Clarence Boddicker was one of the best things in the original.
Yeah.
So shit like that.
Yeah.
And now there's some incredible things coming out. And who's the guy that did Get Out? Who's the director?
Jordan Peele. Yeah.
And he said, he was like, look, I doubt I'll be casting a white person, a white guy, as a main leading role for a long time, or ever again.
Yeah.
And you go, absolutely. When you look down in history, imagine being someone who isn't a straight white male.
Yeah.
Looking back, all the films that were coming out, there was rarely anybody to aspire to.
Completely.
You know, you had Sidney Poitier way back.
Yeah.
But then that was ages ago.
Yeah.
So it's been, there has been black actors and of course there have, but it's just been a wash.
Well, that's it. People will argue, they'll always give an example of a Sidney Poitier and Eddie Murphy, but that's picking one out of 100 white males at the time. That doesn't prove anything.
No.
It kind of proves the problem.
Yeah.
The fact that you're going, I can think of three Wow. Yeah. Well yeah. done, mate. That's amazing.
In 100 years of cinema, whatever yeah. it is, there's been three.
It's hilarious because I'm writing a load of scripts at the moment, and I often have my mates saying, oh, are you going to have anything in there that I could play? I'm like, nah. I want to put myself in it, and I'm white, so that's kind of taken up pretty much all the white spaces I wanted in there. There might be one or two others, but other than that, I want a range and a diversity. Yeah. I want a variation. So, it's annoying for people. But again, it's right, and it's balancing things out.
Yeah, man. We were talking about cultural appropriation a little while ago.
Yeah.
I might have said this on another podcast, but I think it needs saying again that we need white people, especially British white people, need a little bit of a mashup. We need some influence from outside.
Yeah.
Because if we didn't, we would just be pie-eating Morris dancers.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, completely.
We need that. I mean, the music that you've created comes from a black background. The music I'm into is, even rock and roll, Elvis Pilford was from black people. And that's... Without that, white people would be nothing.
The thing is, people get defensive because they think they're being called. I discussed this with a mate of mine recently. He was saying he was getting angry over Joaquin Phoenix's speech at the BAFTAs when he said about diversity and him being part of the problem in the past and this kind of thing. And my mate hadn't even watched it. He was like, "What? They're saying that we're all racist then?" And I was like, no, he's making a really good point. And I said, genuinely, watch it, because I think he addressed all the arguments that people normally get defensive on.
Right, yeah.
And people say, you're a successful white man. He kind of said, look, I'm guilty here. I've not spent enough of my career pushing for diversity on my sets, pushing for women and people and all this kind of thing. And I thought his speech was amazing, but my mate was getting all annoyed. And I called him out on it in a group message, and then we had a bit of a, and then we took a little sub message, like we took a side and had a one-on-one chat. And he was saying, the thing is, I'm just sick of people just calling me racist just because I'm white and this and that. And I was like, who's calling you racist? Mm. And he's like, well, and I kind of pulled it. I was like, when was the last time someone called you racist? He was like, well, no, it's just online and that. It's like, well, no, that's just articles and people trying to sell, get clickbait type things and push agendas. It's like, who actually has called you racist? And he was like, I've never had anyone actually call me racist for anything I've done.
No.
He was just feeling attacked as a straight white man because social media has made him feel that way.
The
way social media and the press continues to tick over is to make the left think the right are attacking them and the right think the left are attacking them. And genuinely, I think 90% of the time, they're not.
No.
They're really not.
No.
Like I hear more every time there's a new development in trans culture. I never hear about it from any of my trans friends.
No, right.
I hear about it from angry white people going, I can't believe that they want this now.
Or
I can't believe that they're pushing this. Or I can't believe this. It's like, my trans mates don't give a fuck about any of these things. They're like, no, I'm not pushing for that. I really don't care. I'm just getting on with my life. It'll always be the kind of older angry white man that's going, God, they want this now.
And
this
I know.
And that. I don't think they do.
It's like they sound like they're trans people and people from like immigrants, and they're all banging on their doors going, we want this, we want that.
Here's what we want.
And it's like, leave me alone. But it's like, no, mate, it's not like that at all. You need to relax.
Yeah.
You know, just chill the fuck out a bit.
Yeah.
Take it, you know, you're not personally being attacked.
Yeah.
Change is happening. Change has to happen.
Yeah,
it had to have happened way before this.
Yeah.
So now we're in the middle. You've just got to just do your bit.
Yeah.
Instead of kicking against it, go, actually, I have been benefiting from this.
Yeah.
You know, I've said this before. Things like, you know, I, as a straight white man, I could go out at night and go out unmolested. I could drive my car any time of the day or night and not get worried about the police stopping me.
Yeah.
That's what they mean by privilege. People go, well, I'm skinned. They go, I'm skinned. That's not what they mean.
Yeah.
They talk about how you're able to live your life.
White privilege is one of the most annoying bits of terminology that's been invented because it's so open to misinterpretation.
Absolutely.
It gives the clear impression that it's about, oh, your life's easy and this and that, and it's not.
No,
it's just there's certain things that are different and certain things that aren't the same because of your skin colour. But yeah, it's just, I was discussing with my brother the other day, the the power of mistakes in terminology. And he was saying he thinks, and he's nailed it really, it's really clever. I'm going off on tons of tangents here.
It's all right.
But he kind of said he's been thinking about it a lot, all the Brexit stuff. And he thinks the person that is to blame is the person who came up with the term Brexit, the journalist. And he did some research. The journalist who came up with the word Brexit.
Yeah.
And because if we didn't have that word, there wouldn't be all these grey areas and all these people interpreting it in different ways. Because when Brexit was being voted for, no one knew what Brexit was. But we could say Brexit.
I want
Brexit.
Yeah.
I'm voting for Brexit.
Yeah.
The man at the end of the road could be voting for Brexit, and for him it means no more immigrants.
Mm.
And the man at the other end of the road could be voting for Brexit, and for him it means something completely different.
That's right.
So that vague term caused all the problems.
Yeah.
Because then when Brexit happens, well, Brexit's happened at least, it's like, if we didn't have that term, it would have said, here's what we voted for, and what's happening isn't what those people voted for. But because it was just this loose term, it's this fictional thing.
It's all up in this one weird word.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's it now.
It's the damage of language in that way.
God, and every time you mention the word Brexit, it goes either way. You get anger comes along a lot.
Yeah,
you know, and only because I'll say, why did you vote for it? Give me a reason why, a tangible reason.
Yeah,
because it's always a bit vague, and it's always a bit like, wow, I want my country back, or I want sovereignty, or I don't want to be governed by the EU. Like, but you didn't give a fuck about the EU on the 14th of June, 3 years ago.
Yeah,
you know,
on a day-to-day basis as well.
Yeah, it's like, there's a lot, even now, I imagine there'll be people listening to this, and they're going, oh, this again.
Yeah.
Like that, get Brexit done.
Completely, yeah, again.
Which got the Tories back in power, and you're like, oh,
so what is it? What are we talking about? What is this Brexit thing we're talking about? But again, I think it works on both ways. I remember seeing an interaction. It was either online between you and Jade, or Jade talking about it, saying, look, it can be as bad for those who are against it. Because, again, we don't know what's going to happen yet, and we don't know what... Do you know, it's not happened. Yeah. I have that tendency to go, right, we're all fucked then. It's like, well, are we? That's as bad as the other side going, well, we need to do it because otherwise... We need to get our country back, or otherwise this.
Yeah.
It's the same with on the left instantly going, well, that's it now. We're going to be eating out of bins and so on and so forth. And again, there is valid arguments for the problems that we're already seeing, the rise in the need for food banks and stuff like that. Yeah. There are indications there, but still, it doesn't benefit anyone to go raging off to the extreme.
We need to be talking to each other. And the fact that, I was talking about this the other day, that the planet is, not the planet, it's like our ecosystem is fucked. We've fucked it. Whoever is to blame, like the people telling us that we should consume and consume and consume.
Yep.
And that's been, ever since I can remember, they've always said, buy this, buy that, this will enhance your life, you need this, you need that. And now we're being told, oh yeah, you shouldn't have bought all that stuff. We go, you told me to buy it.
Yeah.
I trusted you. You told me to buy it. And now you're telling me...
I didn't even want it until you told me about it.
I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
I don't need to upgrade my phone 20 times a year, but you told me I have to.
Yeah.
And now I'm the problem again. It's always back on us. And we should be uniting. Everybody... Politicians, everybody, and I know this is probably a hippy-dippy way of looking at it, but in order for a human race to survive, we shouldn't be having this vote for red, vote for blue.
Yeah.
We should all be coming together as one, the whole planet, and going, we need to sort this out as one, together. People being billionaires, just so they can say that they're billionaires.
Yeah,
you know,
crazy.
You're like, that's all that is.
There's no need for it.
It's just dick waving.
Yeah,
there's enough money and resources in this world for everybody.
Yeah,
and yet you've got the pigs taking over the farm, and they're just keeping it for themselves.
Yeah,
and it's fucked. We should be coming together. Now Brexit is dividing us even more than we already were.
Yeah,
and it's the way we're going, we're just gonna, one day we'll just not be here.
Yeah,
and that's what people forget. You know, these viruses come along, and it'll just be something like that. Boom, just won't be here anymore.
Yeah.
So we should be coming together.
I completely agree. And I want to give some context as to why we've kind of jumped into all this. Because from your show, and from knowing you, and from hearing you on other podcasts, it's worth noting that we've both grown up around the kind of people who would be and still are possibly of the views that I now oppose.
Mm.
You know, I've growing up in Essex and South London, I've seen a lot of racism and a lot of homophobia and a lot of sexism. And I've seen that it's 100% inarguably wrong.
Yes.
But I've also seen that it doesn't always come from the stereotypical TV villain.
No.
And the stereotypical TV, he's a bad guy, he's evil. And that's not to defend anyone, but it's to say that there's a lot of people who just need or have more varied reasons for these beliefs. And again, they're all wrong reasons.
Yeah,
but it's not, again, it's easy in the media and on social media to go, everyone who voted for Brexit is a racist.
That's right.
That doesn't help anything.
No, of course it doesn't.
Because there's a lot who weren't.
Yeah.
Who were just, and again, they get annoyed every time I say this, but who were just misinformed and were wrong. But I believe everyone was misinformed on Brexit. The people who voted for it and the people who voted against
it. The whole thing was a massive
Everyone was
lies,
misinformed, so I'm not having a go at the people who voted for it exclusively. It's everyone was an idiot in that situation. We should never have had a say. But it's that thing that they're not all racist. And when we say they're all racist, it makes the actual racists think there's a lot more of them.
Yeah.
And it empowers them. And I think that's why we've seen a rise in racist events and racist attacks and racist acts. Because they feel, oh well, from what I know, I'm the majority.
Yes.
And I don't think that's the case. I genuinely, I may be delusional there, but I don't think that's the case that the majority of this country is racist or homophobic or anything else.
I have to be honest and say when we had the latest general election, I got really into it. I got really emotional.
Yeah.
And I did start calling people. I even said Brexit is a racist vote. Brexit is a racist vote. And Jade did a video of me just going mad. I was in the kitchen and I'm like, I don't fucking believe this fucking bullshit. No one gives a shit about other people and blah, blah, blah. And then after I calmed down, I'm like, I probably shouldn't do things like that. We all got
it's
caught
natural,
up in it.
Completely. Yeah.
There is more to it. There's more grey area. There's more subtleties, as you've said.
Yeah.
So the only way, and me standing there going, you racist pricks.
Yeah.
That, as you said, doesn't help anybody.
No.
You've got to be more open-minded than that and have a look and go, all
right. And again, it's not to be delusional and think there aren't a lot of races, and we haven't had a rise in that, because I think we have had a rise in that kind of thing. I think when I was a kid in the 80s, there was a lot of racism, and it seemed to go away a lot. And I do think there's a rise in it now and an openness, but still, that doesn't mean that it's the majority. And
no,
it's...
I'm baffled by the... Because I know family members, people that I've grown up with, people I was at school with, that are, I see the stuff they post online, the Free Tommy Robinson stuff and the anti this and Katie Hopkins for mayor, and you're like, where is this? We grew up together. How is this?
How have you
gone off on that tangent? And I haven't, because I could have probably quite easily have been.
Yeah,
you know, if I'd have believed there, because I do remember a lot, like you said, a lot of racism, a lot of homophobia. I could have been one of those people very easily if I'd have. But there was just something in me that was like, it doesn't sound right. And I don't know why. And it just pushed me, it pushed me away from these people.
Yeah.
And I had my eyes set on London and music. And I think maybe that was it. Maybe it was the fact that I was listening to a lot of diverse music.
Yeah.
Maybe it was that. Because I was always interested in I think I said this before. Sorry, I keep saying that. But
that's fine.
When things like hip hop, when I got into hip hop, and you start going, well, and then someone will go, well, that's Labby Siffrey, that bit there. And you go, really? You go, who's Labby Siffrey? And then you go, oh, right, cool, oh, right. And then you go back, and then you start going back through all the old records. And then suddenly you'll go, that's that riff in that Beastie Boys song.
Yeah.
That's this, that's that. And I think I was lucky that I had that influence. And that's what changed, that's what kept me more open-minded than most.
Because, I mean, it goes to exactly as you said, it makes you aware of the positives of diversity.
Yeah.
The improvements that your life can have and your culture can have from diversity. Not this, well, I'm fine of them being here, but they should speak English, or they should do this, or they should do that. It's like, why? Let's get the variation in.
There's nothing better.
Let's mix things up a bit.
Exactly. There's nothing better than when you hear someone who's speaking Arabic.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, it just sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Someone who speaks French sounds sexy, and Italians just sound passionate, and it's all these things, and you're like, who doesn't want to have all this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's such weird things to get stuck on. That there was, I saw a TV debate recently that was, and it was discussing, do you want to hear other languages when you're in your town or whatever? Like, it's like, do you care? Why would that be a thing? You're like, I just don't want to hear it. And so it's
funny, isn't it?
What?
But these are the same
why?
People.
What's the reason? Other than you've read an article that, or someone's told you that you shouldn't, that you should oppose that.
Yeah.
I can't see how anyone would naturally come to that, would naturally be out and about and go, what was that? I don't like hearing that sound that isn't familiar to me. It's like
I had that on a train. Weird. I was coming into, this is when I lived in Charlton, and I was coming into London Bridge on the train, and there was a lady speaking on her phone in her native tongue. I don't know what it was, but there was a couple sat opposite me, and they were getting annoyed, and they were pissed as well.
Yeah.
And she just went, speak English. Like that, and I just was just looking out the window, and there's another guy next to them, this young guy, and he was like looking at me all big-eyed like, shit. And then the guy she was with, he starts going, yeah, speak fucking English. And then I just went, are you two fucking mad?
Yeah.
And they're, what? I went, why are you being like that? Why are you being racist? They're like, why? What's it got to do with you? I went, because you're being fucking pigs. You're being pigs.
Yeah.
And he went, all right. He goes, we'll get off and have a fight this year. I went, we're going to fight me on the platform, are you, dickhead? And it was... I realised that no one else was like backing me up. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So I got off and I was livid. But yeah, why? How can you just be? The guy was Irish as well.
Yeah,
you're like, dude, your accent to other people's is probably a bit odd. Why are you annoyed?
Yeah.
My accent probably sounds odd to some people when I'm in, like, say I'm up north or something like that, or I'm abroad. This weird, you know, you don't sound like me, so I don't like you.
Yeah.
Fucking madness.
And it's just, again, it's the stuff that I think that we're just told to be annoyed about and we just go along with it.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff that it's like, I can't see that anyone would naturally have come to any of these conclusions.
No.
It's just something else is making them go, well, I'm meant to be offended by that or annoyed at that.
Yeah.
Or whatever else. I was having a bit of a chat online the other day because I just did a tweet just saying it's kind of, it's peaks. Social media entitlement when you see people getting annoyed at how long or how much people are mourning something.
Oh, right.
Because I saw people getting annoyed at people still mourning Kobe Bryant.
Right.
And I don't really know about him.
No.
I wasn't really... is what it is.
Yeah.
But I saw people getting annoyed that people were... And I
still...
This tweet is someone... People were responding saying, the thing that annoys me is when I see mates who I know aren't even that big a fan and they're being heartbroken all that. And I just messaged back going... Why do you care?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Why do you care? It's like, yeah, but, you know, they don't really... It's like, but why do you care? Why does it affect... Just let them do it.
Yeah.
If their mourning is genuine or ingenuine, just let them do it.
Just do it. Yeah,
Why do you... Yeah, again, someone's told you that you should be annoyed at that. It's like, it doesn't matter.
Nah, it doesn't matter.
If they are or aren't, how little or how much someone is mourning over something, it shouldn't be something... It's something that social media has made us...
Yeah.
Think that we should get annoyed about. It's like, I've not seen you post RIP about this person. It's like, yeah, all right.
What do you mean?
It's nothing to do with it. Why do we care? Why are we so in each other's business?
I did that a couple of years ago. Someone died and I wasn't a massive fan. I just knew who they were.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's a shame, RIP, blah, blah. And then I'm like, why have I posted that?
Yeah.
I wasn't into them.
Yeah.
Why am I getting involved in this? This is just... Oh, I need it. It's subconsciously, there's like, oh, that'll get a bit of attention.
I need to let people know I cared. Yeah. I was into that, yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck, man? So I deleted it and come away from it. But the other thing is, as well, all these people dying, it's very sad. But then as soon as someone goes, oh, RIP, blah, 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 a lot of this is happening now. They go, oh, yeah, but he attacked this woman.
Yeah.
I know he did that. They read Kirk Douglas and they said about Kobe as well. And you're like, fuck me, you can't say this, you can't say that. And
again, another one that comes up a lot is, you know, 100 people died in Sudan
last week.
Why haven't you said them? It's like, again, these things, there isn't a monopoly on mourning or sadness. It doesn't have to be you didn't care about this, but you care about this. And equally, I might care greatly about that. I just might not have tweeted about it. I might have... talked about it with my mates or taken some action or done something in my private life.
If you're a decent human being, you give a fuck about the kids in Syria getting killed on their way to school.
Yeah.
That should be understood. Of course you give a shit about that, but I don't need to tweet about that every day. You should just understand that do you know what? I'm a decent human being.
Yeah.
You should probably understand that from anything else that I do.
Yeah.
So you're going to know when I see pictures of kids getting blown up, I get affected by that. It breaks my heart that we have this shit going on in the world, that there's still kids in cages that are separated from their families. And that, of course, it bothers me, but I don't need to tell you that every day. You should just assume.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be so sure that the person you're saying RIP about is someone that had a clean slate.
Yeah.
They hadn't done anything.
It's impossible.
Yeah. And it's impossible because you start to realize, you go, fuck me, most men have been pricks.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
It's the assumptions of social media, though. I remember I got a lot of backlash a little while ago because I tweeted Boris Johnson just saying, apologise for... It was something he said at the time. Just apologise for that. It's unacceptable. And I had loads of people tweet me, but loads of them were tweeting me saying, so you're fine with Corbyn saying something racist. And the best part was... The tweet I'd done before that was to Jeremy Corbyn just saying, apologise for the anti-Semitism stuff. Like, you're just dodging the questions. If you just apologise, it's dealt with. And it's just so funny that it's like, either side. I'd have people, because of that tweet to Corbyn, go, oh, so it's okay for Boris to do this and that. And I'm like, no, I tweeted him as well. You know, and I didn't do it as a public thing. I did it direct. So it wasn't a trying to make a big deal. It was just, I'd been watching a load of stuff that day and I was like, oh. On the Corbyn one, I knew he followed me, so I was like, I know it's not actually going to make a difference, but seeing one more voice just saying, just deal with it. Just don't hide from it. Just say, look, I don't think there's been any anti-Semitism, but if there has, it's fucking not on, and I apologise, and I'm going to do so, rather than going, you know, hiding from it. But
exactly that. Why didn't you? Why didn't you just do that?
Yeah, just deal with it.
It's and you can't... Like, you might read something about... From whatever side. Like, I'll give an example. Yesterday, Simon Evans, fellow comic, he did this. He wrote this wonderful piece about Jordan Peterson.
Yes.
And it's about the fact that, you know, Jordan's been... He was talking about this, he's talking about that, and a lot of people don't like him because of the stuff he said about the trans language and things like that. Yeah. But you read the piece, and it was wonderfully written. Really beautiful piece. And he was talking about the fact that, you know, Jordan Peterson, despite what you might think, he's still a human being and he's had his own problems. Like, his wife is terminally ill. He himself has been really ill. He had to go somewhere else to get the treatment because they don't do it where he's from, and his daughter's not well or whatever. And there's all these things. You know, basically, he should be shown some compassion, you know. You know, everyone's talking about be kind. But they kind of pick and choose who they're going to... But me... By me sharing that post, people go, you're a fan of Jordan Peterson. You're clearly a right-wing. You clearly got right-wing views. You're, no, I haven't. Yeah. I like that piece. It was a wonderful... Yeah. Especially in light of what's happened over the weekend with poor Caroline Flack. You know, it's...
Well, again, it's a prime example of it, of people angry at what happened to Caroline Flack because of the pylons on social media. And their response is to pile on... Piers Morgan or Dan Wootton or whoever these people are. And these aren't people I'm a fan of at all.
No.
But the clear irony of piling on because you don't approve of people piling on someone and saying you need to remember that these people are human, but then not remembering that those people... And again, you know, I do feel that those people mentioned are the villains of the piece at times because they do that for a living. But... you've got to see the irony in someone who was hounded via the media and equally by social media, that your response is to then hound another human on social media to try and get equality.
Yeah.
None of this is in my notes for what we're going to talk about. We're literally 35 minutes in and we've not touched a thing, but we don't get to catch up much. So it's nice to have a proper chat. And it's one of the things... I loved about your Fringe show. And your Fringe show, it's you're doing a run of it at the Soho Theatre, which is one of the reasons I wanted to get you on now.
Nice one.
Because I really wanted to get anyone I can, even if it's one extra person along, I wanted to get that one extra person along because I was only at the Fringe really briefly this year. I think I saw four shows and yours was one of them. And I loved it because it was exactly this. It was human... discussion and conversation on topics, making serious points, but obviously wonderfully funny along the way, but not feeling like it's preaching, not feeling like it's trying to be woke for woke's sake and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? It just felt very real. So how was it to do The Fringe? And you got amazing reviews and really good responses. But the beauty of The Fringe, you know, I'm making this a really long question now, but a lot of that came after you'd been really open about poor ticket sales and how much of a struggle it was.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a beautiful thing to see that, number one, the openness of that, because we talked very early on about how when you're on tour, you just talk about how well things are going.
That's right, yeah.
And that can be The Fringe. And every comedian I talk to has a love-hate relationship, probably heavier on the hate with The Fringe, because it can be really tough and really heartbreaking. Yet you don't see that in the promotional packages.
No.
And you kind of did that. You kind of made that part of your promotion in a way.
Yeah. Oh, inadvertently as well. It was because I've been a comic for 15 years. So, you know, you're always right from day one, you're pushing because you want to be a better comic. You want to do the better gigs. You want to start making money from it. You know, you want it to be your livelihood. And then you get to Edinburgh. And I'd been up to Edinburgh. The first time I ever went to Edinburgh was like 2006. And I went up with Just the Tonic to do flyering and promotion for them. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really a comic then. I only just started. So I got to see the workings of the festival.
Yeah.
And it's you're in a city full of people that you know, full of colleagues and friends. Mm-hmm. But now and again, you'll find yourself stood in the doorway in the pouring rain and you just feel so alone. And you see everybody else selling what they're doing. They're like, everyone's selling out. Everyone's doing this. Everyone's doing that. And that's what was happening. I went back up in 2014 with my first show, and I did it completely wrong. I was in a venue that was miles out of the city. I didn't put the time and date on my flyers. I didn't really know what I was doing. I hadn't written a show. I just went up there and thought, I'll just wing it. Because you go, I could talk for 20 minutes. Sure, I could do it for an hour. And you can't.
Yeah.
You cannot go up there. Unless you're Ross Noble.
Yep.
Or Russell Hicks or someone like that.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. So I went up there, made all the mistakes. I've pissed every day. I remember crying on the meadows, just sat on this bench crying because I was just pissed every day and I was exhausted and my marriage was in a bit of a bad way and Robin Williams died and that's what triggered it. Robin Williams died and I was crying and I'm like, I loved him. I didn't love him like that. Why am I crying?
Yeah.
So then I've made all the mistakes in Edinburgh. And then last year, I just bumped into a few people and they were already struggling on like day two.
Yeah.
And then I'd heard stories of someone else that I know who was already talking about going home. And I was just walking back and I just thought, I'm going to say something because this is day two.
Yeah.
These are just preview nights. This isn't even the festival.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then I'm like, so I just, I typed it out and I said to Jade, I'm going to put this out. And she went, you can't do that. Because people think you're weak and you're failing and you're this and you're that. I'm like, I've got a feeling people need to know. And I just put it out. And I thought, well, hopefully if someone somewhere reads it.
And what was the tweet? What was it?
Just saying, look, you know, I had two people in my show yesterday. I had nine people today or something like that. But it's just how it is. It's the festival.
Yeah.
Don't get caught up in it. It's, you know, don't let it get to you. Yours isn't the show that's being ignored. Loads of people are in the same boat. Something like that.
Because all the posts always come when you make it onto the sold out board.
Yeah.
Or when you've got, you know, and that's, again, it's natural and human. It's not arrogant. It's that excitement because you know it's a struggle.
Yeah.
I remember the excitement when I was doing it and when my name went up on the sold out board a few times, I'd be like, I'd be there every day having a little look going,
of course you
oh wow, fuck, that's great, this has happened. But yeah, you're completely right, that's the bit that you hear about.
Yeah.
And there's going to be, you don't think in the moment about the fact there's going to be hundreds of comedians, potentially tens or hundreds of your friends seeing that post and being broken by it.
Of course they are.
Because they're seeing even they love you and they're supportive, but they're seeing the sold out board of three of their mates who they've gigged with, who they feel on a level with, and they had two people in.
Exactly. There's, you know, inside you want to be successful. You have that image of getting to Edinburgh and the whole festival goes, you're here.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
And then everyone goes, quick, Rich Wilson's here.
Yeah.
And everyone
guys,
piles in. Yeah,
guys,
he's
here.
And then everyone piles into your show and they carry you out on their shoulders every day. And then just every time you open the door of your accommodation, there's another award by the door. And all the newspapers are singing your praises. Oh, God, yeah. And that's how you want it to be. But in reality, there'll be someone who will be the toast of the festival.
Yeah.
Something will click. Like Phil Wang was last year.
Yeah.
Lauren Patterson was before. They're the ones. And that's who everyone's talking about. And that'll happen. That'll happen to one or two people.
Yeah.
The rest of you, if you can get people in and you're making some money and people are getting to know that your work and what you're doing, you know, you're building a momentum, you know, and that's how I feel. That's what happened last year. I just felt I've got a little bit more momentum, more people. Because before that, I'd done the Free Fringe. And the Free Fringe is great, but no one comes to see you on the Free Fringe. No industry will come.
Yeah.
And that's why we were like, right, this year, not last year, going to do Gilded Balloon, paid venue.
Mm-hmm.
And just doing that elevates you know. It costs money, but the industry starts taking you seriously.
Yeah.
You go, oh, he actually gives a shit about this.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what he's made of.
So how was it when that tweet got a positive reaction and got some press and got things like that? And you know, when I came to see you, it was, I think it was sold out.
Yeah,
it was very near. Yeah, it was a rammed one. So, and it wasn't like it was one of the main, like, you know, you have the main ones of the festival.
That's
like,
right. Yeah.
Here's the weekends that are always going to be your biggest crowd.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a fairly regular Thursday or something, or that's a Friday or something like that. So, yeah, how was it when, after you probably had trepidation about being open about it, how was it when the reaction was really positive and the press got behind it and things like that?
I was really surprised.
Yeah.
To be fair, I was really, because you just go, it's just a tweet. I'm just putting this out there. I just want people to know that they're not alone.
Yeah.
We're in this together, and just take your time and everyone. And that was it. I was literally walking back to where we were staying, and I just didn't think anything more about it. And then the next morning, I sort of looked at my phone. And I'm like, holy shit! And I was getting messages from people.
Yeah.
And Rich, you know, nice one, man. Because you don't. I didn't realise how people saw me. You think,
yeah,
I know one knows who the fuck I am.
Yeah.
But if you're in the industry, you know people and you see them on a certain level. People see me as, you know, a top MC or whatever they see me as.
Yeah.
And I was really, that surprised me that people knew who I was and actually took time to read it and actually took stock in it and just went, oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
I had people coming up to me all over the festival go, look, you don't know me, but nice one for that.
That's wicked.
It really made me feel better.
Yeah.
And that made my festival. I was elated just by that.
Yeah.
It really, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful moment, man.
I love it.
Yeah.
So did you feel pressure this year at the festival? Because it felt like, from talking to you, it felt like you knew this year you had a really fucking good show.
Yeah, well, that's...
But you would also know how there's a good chance no one's going to come and see it. And that's more heartbreaking. Because I know, because you came from being more a gigging club comic rather than putting on your hour-long show comic. So it felt like, when you might have done it previously, it's like, well, I'm just doing some jokes.
Yeah.
I'm doing this. Whereas this year it felt like you'd put together a show. You had artwork that reflected the show. You had a name that reflected the show. You knew you'd done a fucking show.
Yeah.
So then it must feel, I don't know, for some reason more precious. But I want people to actually see this one. Obviously, you're a comedian, so you always want people there.
Yeah.
But this year you're like, this is the one. Next year might not be this good. Last year wasn't, you know, or whatever. It's like, this is the one. I need you to come and see this.
Yeah. Well, that's it. There was pressure. Because it's a culmination of 15 years work.
Yeah.
It's my show. The show last year had morphed from my previous shows and become last year's show. And it's like, that's it. That's the one. Now, this year, I've got to do a whole new show.
Yeah.
It's all about honesty, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Which was triggered from last year's show. But it's all new stuff.
Yeah.
So last year was the one. It's like, that's my debut album.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got all my greatest hits on it. That's got all the tracks that you might have heard somewhere. Oh, I love it when he does that bit. That's all on that. So there was a pressure.
Yeah.
But the other side of it as well, with trying to tell yourself, because it's easy to get caught up in the talk of awards and nominations, and I try to just take a step back from all that and go, look, that's not why I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, I want people to know what I do. I want things to come from this.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean the walls and things like that, but
yeah.
I think a lot of people that if they go up, I know people that have gone up there with that in their heads going, I'm going to get nominated. This is, if I'd have done that, I'd have been fucked.
Yeah.
Because that show, had it been me from a couple of years ago, I'd have gone, this is the one. I'm going to get fucking nominated with
and
this
then
one.
And when you're not, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And then you're up for a kick in if you do that.
Yeah. Or the, you know? From what I've seen of the festival is, again, I adore it. Everyone on the podcast gets a little bit annoyed because I just in love with the Fringe, regardless of the good and the bad. But I think one of the most damaging things is when you get a walled buzz.
Yes.
Because that's the thing that can be really crushing. I remember the year I was up there, Brett Goldstein's show at that point was fucking amazing. Yeah. And it got the buzz and there was a lot of talk. And there was a few others that were all amazing and got buzz but then didn't get the nomination. And I think that can be just, it can take the wind out your sails.
Absolutely.
Of your show. Can take. You've got to still perform this. And in a way, if you hadn't had that buzz, you'd be performing every night. It'd be great.
Yeah.
People are loving it. But because you start to have that distraction of that sprinkling of you might be up for this non-existent thing, this fictional thing that we've made up in our head, you might be in with a chance of being considered, of being in the book. You know, it's like, it's...
I saw that. I saw that happen to a couple of people last year where, and I remember being in artist bars and being wherever, and the names, the same names were getting banded around, you know.
Yeah.
And you're going to believe the hype. Of course you are. Yeah. I would have done. I would have been really swept up in it.
Yeah.
But I'm glad not to have had that. It would have been nice. Of course it would. You know, I'm not, don't get me wrong, but the fallout from that, like you say.
Yeah.
I saw these people after the nominations had been announced and they weren't even nominated.
Yeah.
And I was surprised. I'm like, fuck, I thought they were going to be the ones. But
yeah, I thought you were winning.
That must have been horrendous on their
mental health. It's such a weird world that they're all thrown up there in competition without being in competition. And it's a bizarre one. So what are you doing at the Soho Theatre? Is that...
That's last
year's show.
Yeah, this is going to be
Death Becomes Him.
This is going to be the last... This is going to be the last time I do it.
Yeah.
It's the big hurrah.
Yeah.
Rich Wilson arrives in the West End.
Yeah. I love it, but it is beautiful because, again, as someone who has been MC, you know, small slots, a lot of comedy shows for many years, it is a completely different thing. It's not just another gig. It's not, I'm going to be on, here's my gigs for the whole year. Here's the times I'm in London this year. It's like, no, these are the nights that it's the big one kind of thing.
It's exciting, and it's somewhere I never thought I'd be. And this comes from the show last year. This just literally comes from a few people had said, you should go and check out Richie's show. I think he's doing all right. And it was Steve Locke and Kate from the Soho Theatre. They just turned up and they sat in the front. And I go, look, this is, I just want to make you laugh. This is all this show is.
Yeah.
And they were laughing and it was beautiful. And then they were like, we really want this to come to Soho Theatre. I was like, fucking yeah. So that to me, that was better than a nomination or an award. That's like, that's because, you know, I'm working class. I never thought I'd even be doing the Edinburgh Festival. I never even thought I'd be a comic. So to get from being Johnny Jonglers and people lump you in with, you know, like normal, like middle of the road comedy or whatever they do, to get someone to go, come and do it at this theatre is it's indescribable.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how mind-blowing it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've had many people over the years go, well, you're this, you're that, you're too old, you're white, you're this and whatever.
Yeah.
So for them to take a chance and go, we're going to put you on, is next level. Next
I love
level.
It.
Yeah, man.
I love it. It's exciting. So then after that, is it all eyes on continuing to prep next year's show?
Yeah, that's it. That started last year in Edinburgh.
Right.
I had the idea, and then because of the tweet, I was like, honesty, we need to be more honest. And that's where I'm at the minute, being really honest with myself.
It's what I love about it. I love it about that show as well. And I made a note of it because, and in my note, I say, I don't know if I want to discuss this or not.
Right.
And because we're so far in, I don't think we do. Because there's a story in the show that is kind of a big one, and there's a big reveal.
Oh, right.
And it's when you were younger and working in a sauna.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful, and I think it's genuinely important to hear stories like that that aren't... It sounds weird to say it's not played for laughs, because it's a comedy show, but it's not played for laughs in the way it might have been played for laughs 10 years ago East End or wherever, do you know what I mean? Or there's no shame in it.
Yeah.
It's a story that, it feels like 5 to 10 years ago. And if you can't make it to see that show, you do talk about it on Richard Herring's podcast.
That's right,
So, you know, I was aware there's other places it's available.
Yeah.
But
there's no spoilers.
Yeah, but that's it. I think it's the honesty on things like that that I think is really important. Again, coming from someone who sounds and looks like you.
Yeah,
and again, that's not meaning to sound like an insult, but if it's some very 2020-looking... a Noel Fielding, a type comedian. I know he's older than he looks anyway, but and has been around as long. You know, he's been around years, but he's certainly got that look where anything that touches upon sexuality or any of these other things would be completely expected, and it's kind of there. But when you are kind of got the look and sound of blokes, of blokes talking in a pub, I think it's really important. And that was the bit that I was like, I love that. That was such a good, and it's done really well. Again, if it wasn't so well written and structured and well revealed, I wouldn't be avoiding, you know, talking about it. But it's like, I don't want to ruin that for even for just those people who can be in that room at that time. I'd rather they all get to enjoy it. But it's the honesty there. So was that kind of doing a show like that kind of a start to guide you to go right? Actually, this is the more. Particularly with hour-long shows, you can be more honest and more open. It's not like your 15s or 20s on the club circuit. It's like, right, I can really I can tell them a lot about myself and go in.
And it's, I didn't like myself for years because I was up to no good. I was fucking around. And I was doing things because I wasn't happy and I hadn't dealt with stuff from way back in my past. So I messed up a lot of relationships and I hurt a lot of people. Not on purpose, I was just selfish. And then when my marriage broke down, it was that moment, I was like, right, okay, she was a really special person. Why did you fuck that up?
Mm.
And then meeting Jade, and Jade took me to one side and she's just like, look, you're a decent person. I see it in you. But for some reason, you're doing all this prick stuff. Yeah. Go and talk to someone. So I went and had counselling. And then that's where all that came from. It was like I started to find out about myself, started to like myself, and then started to realise that, okay, I can tell the story because there's other people that are in the same situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially, I'm basically a van driver from Kent. That's who I am.
Yeah.
And that's always all I've ever been. And so that story with the sauna, I had it for ages. And I told Jade a version of it. I said, oh, I got this guy touched my dick for £100. And she said at the time, she went, that doesn't make sense. I'm like, well, you know, that's how it was, And we went to see Sophie Willan at Soho Theatre. And Sophie talks about being a sex worker, talks about her mum's struggles with narcotics and things like that. And I'm sat there and I'm watching it and people were falling around laughing.
Yeah.
One, because Sophie's a brilliant comic, but the way she was telling these stories about being a sex worker, I was like, holy shit, this is fucking inspirational.
Yeah, yeah. There's no shame or taboo on these things where there would normally be.
Exactly. And it was like, oh, wow.
Even if it's presented in comedy, it'll often be with a little bit of a little bit of shame or a little bit of I'm laughing to make me feel more comfortable rather than here's some stuff that happened. Isn't that weird?
Isn't this mad?
Yeah.
And I leaned over to Jade and I'm in the middle of the show and I went, you know that story I told you? She went, yeah. I went, oh, he sucked me off. And she went, I fucking knew it. And I went, and I leaned back in and went, twice. She went, you prick, you fucking prick. And after that, I told her the story. And she went, why aren't you telling this story?
Yeah.
And so I want it to be, I get people coming up all the time, like gay men and that come up and go, mate, it's just refreshing to hear someone that sounds like my dad talking about the time he got noshed off for 100 quid. And it's a funny story.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. And because I'm more comfortable with myself and my sexuality and whatever else, it's like you go, yeah, I could tell that story because it's not offensive to anyone.
Yeah.
The funny thing is me being in that situation in the first place and just yeah, it's yeah. You know, you're, you know, because your sexuality is irrelevant. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
the point.
Completely.
I don't, you know, there should be more people. That's why I did a podcast. More people that sound like a van driver from Kent talking yeah. about crying and
yeah.
and getting wanked off by a fella.
It's what I mean. Let's touch upon the podcast. It's called Insane in the Membrane, and I think it's fantastic. I think the James Acaster episode is absolutely amazing. And I'm having James back on the podcast. Kind of, in a way, I see it as a follow up to your chat on Insane nice. In the Membrane, because you were chatting to him before his tour.
That's right. Yeah.
And I chatted to him just socially a bit during his tour, and I know he struggled a bit.
He
there
did,
were things,
yeah.
and it was amazing hearing your podcast after the tour had happened, because he talks about his nerves over some of the stuff he gets into, because
yeah.
it's his most personal tour, and he was aware that because he's got to that commercial level of being on TV and that, there's going to be certain crowds there who aren't ready for what he's going to go into, who are going to be more the heckling type crowds. Yeah. And he was aware that at some point during the gig, he's going to realise what kind of crowd it is, and then realise he has to be this open and tell these stories yeah. that, as it turns out, I think he's talked about a bit, he probably wasn't ready to be telling on stage yet, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that's it. He wasn't at that place. So it made it really hard for him as a tour and made it really vulnerable, because he'd get halfway through and be thinking, I don't want to do the second half of this gig because
yeah.
I know what I have to say. And with the greatest respect, I don't want to say it to these people.
Yeah.
There's certain people in this crowd who aren't the kind of people I want to be this open with and this vulnerable with, because they're hecklers and they're and that kind of thing. And it was amazing hearing that conversation. And as I was discussing before we started, the Michael Smiley chat is one of, I've recommended it to so many people.
That was a good one. Yeah.
I thought the Tez one, which might have been the first,
that
I think.
That was the first
the Tez
one. Yeah, first one I ever recorded.
Because again, it was just comfortably discussing. On that one, the thing that got me was talking about all the Me Too stuff.
Yeah.
Because it was openly, again, as we were doing early on, openly saying, look, it's fucked up all this stuff that's happened. But also, it can be a bit nerve-wracking now, not knowing what I can, and you know, knowing that I'm not one of those. It's not that I've got some big secret and this and that,
just
but knowing,
big reveal.
Yeah, but knowing that it's like, right, is everything all right? And again, the kind of conclusion that you come to was, yes, yeah, fine, because you're good people.
Yeah,
you don't actually have anything to worry about. But it's natural to have that initial moment of, oh, can I do this or can I do that? Now that gets put to extremes when people are like, you can't even hold a door open for a woman anymore, you'll get sued and all that kind of shit. It's like, no, you won't.
No,
but it's natural
don't.
To have those moments of caution and then have that reassurance of, no, actually, you're a good person. It's going to be...
Ask questions.
It's all fine. Ask questions. Yeah.
Ask questions. That's what I've learned. And I know that's very difficult for some people.
Yeah.
I suppose because, you know, I do comedy, so I'm a bit more... I'm fundamentally a shy person. So it's taken me a lot to start doing comedy and being a comedian, but through doing that, it's made me more, I'm a bit more brave to ask questions.
Yeah.
And that's why I have the people I have on. Like with Tez, I don't know anything about being a Muslim. So
it
was like, okay, tell me about it. I don't understand it. I don't know where, I don't know. Because you get told the stuff from the media going, oh, they lock their women under the stairs and they do this and they do that.
Yeah.
You go, no, actually, speak to someone who has that, who has those beliefs, and go, is this true? And they'll go, no, you prick, don't be daft.
Yeah.
Do you not eat for 6 months? And they go, no, you idiot, that's not what happens.
Yeah.
And that's why I have these people on, because I want to learn. I learn with every guest.
Having that openness and questions, I loved it. I had Jordan Gray on my podcast
years
back, and it's someone I'd love to hear on Insane in the Membrane.
Yeah,
and
we're going to sort it out.
It's a kind of weird, confusing one, because you generally talk to other men, and Jordan, the first time I met her many years ago, I've now found out I'd met her, she was male, but she's transitioned into a woman, and obviously has always been a woman in some way. But when I had her on, it was great because I felt comfortable enough to just ask her all these questions.
Yeah.
And she really early on had to say, I just need to be clear, Pip. I can answer these for me. I can't speak for trans culture in general.
Because
again, you get that in your head. If it's something that's alien to you, you think, so what do trans people think about this? And what do trans people think about that? And she was like, I can tell you what I think about this, and I can tell you what I think about that.
Yeah.
And again, it's that kind of thing. It's so easy to be blind to and ignorant to, but safe space discussion is the only way we get past all of that.
Absolutely.
If because of social media you're scared to ask any of these questions because they'll call me homophobic or they'll call me racist or they'll call me this or that, that's when the ignorance grows
festers
and develops and things like that. Yeah. So what? How have you found doing a podcast? Because you're probably talking to a lot of people that you know reasonably well, but in ways you've never talked to them in the past.
Yeah, someone said to me recently, they said, there's something about you, Rich, that is very disarming. You're very welcoming, and suddenly people do feel they can open up, and they'll be saying stuff they never even knew they were going to say.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because I'm interested in people. I want to learn about people, you know, and like talking to you, for example, I was a big fan of your work for many years. Yeah. And then getting to sit down with you and talk about you, the person behind this wonderful music that you created, fascinated me, you know, talk about your stammer and how honest you were about that. And I come away feeling enriched. I'm like, oh, wow, I really feel I've gained something from being in that person's life for a bit.
Yeah.
And that's what I get from the podcast. Everyone that comes on, it's not about me. It's about the person.
Yeah.
And talk about that. Like, Pierre Novelli was our guest last week. And
I've got that downloaded. I've not listened to it. I did a gig with Pierre a little while back, and he was wonderful. I hadn't met him before, but he's fucking great.
He's one of the best underrated comics we have. He's so funny.
He's got a podcast with Phil Wang, who you mentioned earlier. So is that Best Buds podcast? Shout out to that.
Two top comics. Yeah. And Pierre, Pierre's from South Africa. I only know about the murder and death and apartheid of South Africa. So getting Pierre on and talking to me about that, and me asking, so is this, if I go and get a pint of milk, will I get shot? You know, it's because you don't know. And it's a bit like the same with the trans thing. I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I'm fascinated with it. At the weekend, Jade and I were away with a comic called Jenny B-side.
Yeah.
And Jenny B-side, she says I'm a girl, I'm a woman. But when you look at her, and she looks and sounds like me, a guy who's got pink hair, but she says I'm a woman inside. And I'm like, I don't even know where to begin with that.
Yeah.
So we had some wonderful conversations this weekend going, how does it feel then? Because we talk about that, for instance, the clothing. And I said this at the weekend. If you get a piece of fabric and I make a blouse and I make a shirt out of that same fabric, it's the same fabric.
Yeah.
Yet if you put that on, you go, I put this on because I'm a woman and it makes me feel like a woman. And I'm like, how? Yeah. How does that work? Yeah. And it's things like that. I'm like, I don't get it because I'm not that. So, but don't be. I'm not going, oh, that's fucking stupid. It's just
the openness.
I'm fascinated by it. Yeah.
And that's it. And that's what's key, is I think you've got a really good way of asking the right questions somehow that don't feel you'll go deep. There's no kind of boundaries, but don't feel intrusive. I had a comment on Instagram recently. I've not mentioned this anyone, but I've been thinking about it a bit over the weekend, because again, it's about the right questions. And when you mention my stutter, I'm like, I've always said I'm so happy to talk about my stutter to anyone. I talk about it all the time on the podcast. But I had someone leave an Instagram comment, and this isn't hating on them at all if you're listening, but the comment was just, hey man, quick question, has your stutter got worse recently? Because I've been listening and it feels like it's got a lot worse. But I wasn't sure if I'm wrong there. And I didn't answer because I was like, I was thinking on a drive after I'd read it, I was like, what's the possible benefit of that question? All that's going to do is make me go, oh, right, I'm stuttering more, am I? Oh, wicked. I'm really open to talk about it. But I was like, that's not a question that's actually going to help in any way or go anywhere. And it's like,
maybe they thought so. I don't know.
That was it. I was like, I didn't want to get angry at them or say anything. So I didn't respond because I was like, number one, I don't know if it has. I don't listen back to my own podcasts. No. I'm not making a note of when I stutter in life. But it's one of them, I was like, I don't know how to respond to that because I don't want to be snarky because, again, I like openness and this kind of thing. But it was one of them, I was thinking on the drive, I was like, but when you were writing that question, what was the possible
maybe it came
benefit?
From a pair of, it came from a place of care.
Yeah, yeah, like, care or curiosity, is everything
you,
okay? Yeah, yeah.
You're right, because you seem to be...
Yeah, it's just a curious one. I always remember I've talked about this a bit, but I talked to a guy about who's doing a book on stutters. And he asked a question at the end, and it's one of the few times I've kind of said privately to my family and things like that, is like, that guy is asking a bad question to people who stutter. Because his question at the end was, if you could get rid of your stutter like that, would you or wouldn't you? And the thing is, you obviously would.
Yeah.
It's not something that gives me any actual benefits. I'm fine with it, and I don't have loads of therapy to try and get rid of it. I just live with it. But if the question is, would you get rid of it like that? Yeah. But I can't. So why did you ask that? It's like, just kind of make me highlight. I was like, yeah, it'd be cool if I didn't have it, but I have. So cheers. Why? It's the weirdest kind of, if you could get rid of it. Yeah, I would.
Anyone that's got anything that, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't affect your life, but I'm just saying, you know, if anyone had anything that kind of affected him in any way, shape or form
that didn't have any possible benefits.
Yeah.
Again, I've always said, I think it's benefited me in my life because I think it's opened, as we discussed on the podcast, it's made me develop my vocabulary far better and loads of other things. But yeah, at this stage, I'm not going to go, I'll keep it, actually.
Yeah, that's doing me all right.
No, it's nice of you to ask, but no, I'll stick with this.
It makes me me. It makes me me.
So what inspired you to start a podcast?
Well, it was Stu and Chris.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Doing the hardcore listings.
Yeah.
Doing that, and I think that was one of the first podcasts I'd ever been on, and I really loved it. I want to do radio. I'd love to have my own radio show.
Yeah.
And so doing hardcore listings, I was like, I really like this.
Yeah.
And I came away from that buzzing, and then Brad Acton got in touch, and he just said,
Brad.
I think you should do a podcast, mate. Ah, cool, man. Yeah. And it sort of put it in my head. And me and Brad recorded something that didn't go anywhere. We sort of sat down one day and we were chatting. And then Jade just went, right, okay, I think you should do a podcast. And she bought me a Zoom for Christmas.
Yeah, great.
And I've said this before. And she just went, right, who do you want to speak to? And I gave her a list of names like Acaster and you and everyone else. And then she emailed a load of people as me. And then she got, they've all said, yeah. I mean, what do you mean they've all said, yeah? I mean, everyone wants to do it. I mean, but I don't know what it is. I mean, they just want to do it. And then before you know it, bumping into Smiley, I'd just done Tez. Tez was the first one I ever recorded. Didn't really know what I was doing. We just sat down, switched it on, and away we went. I was wandering around Brixton, messaged Smiley, just said, mate, I'm around if you're around. And he went, yeah, cool. So then I meet up with him, and then we have a cup of coffee, and he's like, what are you doing? I'm doing a podcast. I've emailed a load of my friends to come on, and he got his phone out and he's going, oh, I don't appear to have had that email, Rich. I was going to ask you. I just didn't know when to ask you and blah, blah. He goes, what are you doing now? Nothing. He goes, let's go back to mine. It went back to his that day, and we sat and we switched it on, and that was the episode that came out with Smiley.
You see, that blows my mind because, as I was saying to you before, that's possibly the podcast I've recommended to the most people because I just thought it was amazing. His stories, the way he spoke about the way he's adjusted how he approaches life, the small things he does, the small changes he makes in the world. It's just, it's wonderful. So to then hear that you're like, we weren't even meant to be doing the podcast that day. We just sat down and it happened. And
off we went.
Yeah.
It's Michael Smiley, and I've said this, I know I've said this before. I say that a lot as well. I say that a lot. I've said this before.
Yeah.
Because you have to cover yourself, don't you? He's repeating himself.
Yeah.
Smiley is one of those people that you just feel... You just feel elated after you've walked away from him. He's very honest, he's very open, he's very loving. And every time I see him, I feel like I feel like a wound has been healed.
Yeah.
Like you're right. Like you had a recent chat with him.
Yeah, yeah. And we were saying before, literally, I caught up with him at this party and it was only the weekend just gone and we had a casual chat that turned into a really intense chat that has me more motivated than I've ever been.
Exactly.
Because it was literally just, he was really quite close in my face,
just basically asking me why I haven't done X, Y, Z. I was talking about some stuff I want to do or plan to do and hope to do at some point. And he was just gave me the biggest kick up the arse. Go, just fucking do it. Just do it. Why aren't you doing it?
Exactly.
Why aren't you doing it? You've got the access to do all of it. Why aren't you doing it? I was like, all right.
And that's exactly
I'll do it. Yeah. And now literally I've scheduled things this week, some writing bits, some people I need to hit up, all this kind of thing. It's like, it's going to happen this year now. It's like, all because I had literally 20 minutes with Smiley at a party.
And that's what he does. He ricochets into your life.
I love him.
He moves stuff around and then he fucks off again.
Yeah.
And then you don't see him for 6 months. I literally bumped into him in Manchester by mistake. I was telling you, I pulled up outside my hotel. And I'm like, oh, get these gigs done and I do this. And I had some other shit going on in the background, so I'm sort of dealing with that. And as I pulled the car up, this guy walked past the car on his way up the road. I'm like, that's fucking Smiley, man. So just tell by his swagger. He's got that swagger. And I got out of the car and I'm like, Smiley, dude. And we just fell into each other's arms and we were like, mate, this is amazing. Let's have breakfast. Let's do this. And it was only, I was with him 20 minutes the next morning, half an hour, say. Beautiful, just a beautiful man. And that is what I would like to, I wish I would like to be like that. I want to put that out into the world, that positivity. Like when someone 100%. Meets you, they come away going, oh, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I'd love that. That's what I want. I think that's how we can all make a difference. You can't change what politicians are doing. Like Mark Twain says, that famous quote, isn't there? Is that if voting was really made a difference, it'd be illegal.
Yeah.
You know, the people running the world are going to be running it anyway. All you can do is take care of your little space. So be decent to the people around you. Hopefully that will spread out.
Yeah.
And then they'll be decent to the people around them.
Yeah.
And I think that's all you can do, really.
Again, I'm plugging that particular episode, but he tells a story in that episode about him and his wife and what he does just on a day-to-day just to make a difference in their world.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's so simple and so easy. That it's exactly that. It's like we can get so bogged down these days in the fact that I can't change the world.
Yeah.
But you can, if you focus on the things you can change, things you can do, then your outlook gets infinitely better.
Of course.
Those you come in contact with. Again, it's proof that Smiley has this effect. The fact that we're both going, I love it. I have 10 minutes for that guy and my life has changed. It shows that you can change the world. From just changing the, you know, your immediate surroundings.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
The things, like me being more positive with my outlook towards life, me being more positive in my career, me looking back at my mistakes and going, I was a bit of a cunt then. Mm. I need to not be that person anymore. Going forward, I know I can't change what I've done.
Yeah.
Those people are either going to forgive me or they're going to just go, no, you're an arsehole and I don't want you around. And you have to live with that. You have to live with the consequences of that. But going forward, you're going, I want to be a better person, do better things and do this and do that. So me doing that got me the gig in Grays, which means I met Stu. Stu came into my world. Yep. Through Stu, you came into my world. Through that, I became a podcaster. Through that podcast, I'm now getting gigs I never dreamed of in a million years. People now take me seriously. In the industry, people actually listen to what I have to say and enjoy what I have to say. And that all came from being more positive and being more caring about the people around me.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I love it.
I know it sounds hippy dippy and, you know, but that's just, I was a shit person. I stopped being a shit person and now I've got wonderful things happening.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's perfect. I had someone ask me the other day saying, or I saw someone tweeting about how you have to be positive online for marketing and stuff like that, and it's this fake positivity and blah, blah, blah. And I just said to him, I was like, no, the key is that it's not fake.
Yeah.
That's where it works, because it just makes your life better.
Yeah.
The fact that I will generally be positive in life now. And I wasn't. Again, I was very cynical, and most of the comedy I loved was very cynical, because that's the way it is. But as soon as you go, right, actually, fuck for marketing reasons or anything else. It's like, if you just have a generally more positive outlook, it's a less stressful life.
Exactly. I mean, life's your stuff, you're tweeting jokes and you're funny sayings
just
and
pissing
things.
About all the time. That's all I do on there. I don't get angry.
That's what it should be. Because I've got, like I said earlier, I've been caught up in everything and I've gobbed off and I've been too emotional and I've said the wrong things and it doesn't get you anywhere. You're just part of the screaming and the shouting.
And it extends it for you.
Yeah.
Because you'll start to get over it, and then you'll go back online, and there's 10 people who've replied.
Yeah,
who
exactly.
Who either agree with you or disagree, but it brings it all back up.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah.
Let's try and
I try and have, if I have those angry or annoyances, I'll talk to my missus or my mates, yeah. or I'll talk in the real world, and then it's out and it's over,
yeah.
rather than throw it online to be
exactly.
regurgitating constantly.
Well, again, Smiley said that. Smiley said, you know, everybody's transmitting, no one's receiving.
Yeah.
And that's social media in a nutshell. You know, yeah. we're not listening to each other. We're all shouting and hollering. And then and bad things come from that,
yeah.
you know? And a lot of people aren't listening to what's actually being said. Like Dave Chappelle, for example. I went to see him last week. Mm. Very lucky to have done so. And it was a masterclass in stand-up comedy. And he gets called transphobic and he gets called this, that and the other. Mm. And I was listening to his stuff about trans people. It was this story about his friend who's trans. And you're like, this isn't transphobic.
Mm.
His stuff is very inclusive yeah. of everybody. He loves human beings. He loves being a part of everybody. He's just talking about how fucked up it must be to be in one body, but you feel like you should be in another. He yeah. said, and that's, he yeah. goes, that's a fucked up, funny situation to be in. And that's yeah. all he's doing. He's
yeah,
not,
yeah, yeah.
It's no hatred there.
Yeah.
But people aren't listening. They're looking for somewhere to put their anger and frustration. And
yeah.
And, it's a real shame.
So,
know?
I mean, on that note, where can people find you online shouting and hollering? or where can they pull you up on if you do get angry?
Like, yeah, yeah,
we're
yeah.
talking positivity now. It's easy for one news story to turn that round. So, yeah, where can they find you on socials?
I'm on at I Am Rich Wilson on Twitter and at I Am Rich Wilson on Instagram. I do try and keep it positive.
Yeah.
And I am trying to have a laugh.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that's too much of a hot topic, I don't feel I have the skills sometimes.
Yeah.
That I will, if I'm trying to make a joke about something, I feel I'd rather just not say anything
yeah.
in case it
yeah.
gets me in trouble.
Yeah.
It goes the wrong way. Yeah. But I don't, none of my stuff comes from a place of hate. I love everybody and I'm welcoming and I just want to understand everybody. So if you've got like trans people and people who are gay and things like that, I'm like, I'm interested and I want to talk to you. So, and the podcast Insane in the Membrane is on everything.
Yes.
You can get us on any platform.
And you had an amazing lineup of people. Another one I need to briefly mention, because you talked about just having these curious conversations, was Stu Mangan, 76.
Yeah, man.
Because he's one of my oldest friends, and I listened to that episode, and I learned stuff I never knew about him. Because
it's great,
it's just
it?
Not stuff you ask, or you would feel uncomfortable going. So what happened in that? So what was that? I know a little bit. Yeah. I know something happened, but what was it? And it's just a really beautiful, open, honest conversation. I was like,
he's one of the best people I've ever met.
Yeah,
and that was through you. You can't, because he does the stuff for Stu.
He does all
the editing and that, and so. Just the fact that he was called 76, and I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then meeting him and talking to him, and we messaged each other online, and I'm like, I want to find out about this dude. Do you want to come on and have a chat? I never in a million years thought what he was going to tell me.
Yeah.
What
an amazing fascinating story. Amazing life.
Yeah.
But again, he's another one. Like, he's hopefully good, like Buddy Peace. Like, I'm going to at some point have a 76 and Buddy Peace on mine as the kind of behind the scenes of the network,
because
they're both really good dudes. They do tons of work, but they're kind of in the background. And Buddy was saying he wants him on his podcast as well. And I was chatting to 76 the other day. I was like, so what does he want to talk to me about though? I just really shocked that someone wants to hear from him or talk to him. He's like, what does he want?
Yeah.
I was like, no, it'd be good. But yeah,
really good.
I highly recommend everyone checks out the podcast, gives you a follow and hits up the Soho Theatre show. So, how many are you doing? Is it
doing two nights, March 20th and 21st? That's the Friday and Saturday.
Yes,
Friday's selling pretty well. I need a bit of a boost for Saturday. So, if you're free on the Saturday, do come down. It'd be really a real pleasure.
Amazing. So, when this goes out, it'll almost be exactly a month before. So, you guys have got time to grab them tickets before they're all gone and get involved. Thank you very much, man. It's been an absolute pleasure, and it always is. So, I look forward to seeing all that's ahead.
Nice one. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, mate.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. I told you he was good. And I told you we didn't get into any of the promo-y type stuff for a minute. We just had a good old chat. As said, nothing but love for this gentleman. Soho Theatre, Friday, March 20th, Saturday, March 21st, 8:45. Grab yourself some tickets there. They're like 15 quid or something like that. Check it out. I will see you next week. I hope you enjoyed this as a bonus episode. I will see you next week. Oh, we spoke in the episode about Michael Smiley and James Acaster. They've both been on Distraction Pieces in the past. If we were talking away and you were thinking, who are these guys? And Tez Ilias, if you're thinking, who are these guys? Then you can check them out on this podcast and check them out on Insane in the Membrane. So, in fact, pretty much everyone we mentioned, Jade Adams has been on Distraction Pieces. Tall Dark Friend / Jordan Gray has been on the podcast. So, yeah, you can go back into the back catalogue and enjoy them. But I will see you next week for May Martin. Not May Young, that would be weird. May Martin. And it's a great chat. See you next week. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.